Live and recording Friday Night Fever. It's so good to be back after taking a break over the summer. So welcome everyone and welcome to Friday Night Feels. I am licensed mental health counselor and certified life coach Patrick Manette. And this is Friday Night Feels, which is a show that focuses on a variety of wellness-related issues, such as mental health, addiction, health concerns, stress management, relationships, and all-around life issues. The focus of the show is to create connection and be able to talk about issues that affect all of us and how to be the healthiest versions of ourselves that we can be. Each show, I invite a guest co-host to join me who talks about their experiences. My incredible guest tonight is Fran Garten. So welcome, Fran, to Friday Night Feels.
Hello. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Yay. Okay. So a little background on Fran. She is a speaker, writer, body positive personal trainer, pain reduction coach, and fibromyalgia warrior, teaching people to live pain-free. Her passion is advocating for inclusive movement practices, body acceptance, stress reduction, and learning to love movement. She enjoys volunteering with donkeys, playing with kittens, cross-stitching, and having dance parties. Meet Fran and get ready to end your pain forever. I am so excited. That's one of the best bios I've ever read. This is so
that makes me happy.
Well, I was, you know, when you're reading over it, I was like, oh my God, she works with donkeys. I love this already. This is just so amazing. So welcome to Friday Night Feels.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So, you know, tell me a little bit about yourself and all these amazing things that you're doing and you're involved with. I can't wait to learn from you.
You know, I always find that that's the hard, I go on podcasts and stuff all the time, and I find that's the hardest question. Like, tell me a little bit about you.
It's like dating. Like, right? Okay, are we going to swipe left or right?
Well, I volunteer with donkeys and I love cats and animals. So I feel that you should, I don't even know which way the swipe is. Do I swipe left or
you're
right?
Here, so I think we're just going to go with it. Like it's no backseas, no returns, Fran. Right. Sorry.
That's it.
Patrick, I'm sorry. I'm going through a tunnel. I can't. We lost Fran, folks. We lost Fran. Well, if I were to start, and I think that's a good point. There's so many questions I have just known so many people over the years who really struggle with pain-related issues. And when you and I were connecting and you mentioned fibromyalgia, you know, it just made me think of so many people who struggle with fibromyalgia, chronic pain, the plethora of different issues. And one of the biggest things that I see is they really struggle with depression and that hopelessness because it's first of all, it's invisible and people don't see it, and their pain and their suffering and their struggles get invalidated frequently. And I'm wondering if maybe we could start with there and just share your experiences.
Yeah, sure. Let's start with that. I love to talk about pain. So if you don't know what fibromyalgia is, let me start with that. So fibromyalgia is an autoimmune condition. And the easiest way to understand fibro is that it is a hypersensitivity to external stimuli.
Okay.
So light sensitivity, temperature, sounds, touch, all of those things for someone who has fibro is very, very enhanced. So if, for example, you were to bang your hand, let's say on the desk, for you, it would hurt a little bit. And after a couple minutes, you'd shake it off and it would be fine. But for somebody who has fibro or even dealing with other kinds of chronic pain, then that banging of the hand could put me into a flare and it could hurt for 5 or 6 hours.
Wow.
So it's really difficult to understand when you don't have it. And it's probably, and I know people that are listening that have fibro, they know people that have fibro. I want you to hear this, because what happens is someone who has fibromyalgia says, you know, I have pain, or I'm in a lot of pain today. And the response is, yeah, that's terrible. Oh, I understand. And we, us fibromyalgia people, want to punch you in the face. Mm-hmm. Like that's really how we feel, because we don't understand.
Right.
So think about it in the sense of, We identify many of us as spoonies. And so the spoonie theory is you have a certain number of spoons at the beginning of your day, and that's your energy. Mm. And every activity you do uses a spoon. Mm. So for somebody who has fibro, so when I was in the height of mine and I was probably living for a couple of years at about a 15 out of 10 for pain, like it was, wow. So I would wake up in the morning, open my eyes, try to figure out how I was going to get out of bed. Then when I got out of bed, then I have to get ready for work. So when I get into the shower, I cried in the shower. I cried every day in the shower, like every day, wept, sobbed, and then had to figure out how I was going to get out of the shower to then get dressed and get ready for work. And so when you think about it from a spoon point of view, from an energy point of view, getting up was a spoon, having a shower was a spoon, getting dressed was a spoon, having breakfast. Like, so by the time I got to work on some days, I've used more than half my spoons for the day. Because the thing is, they don't regenerate. For people that have chronic pain or fibro, they don't regenerate their energy. So someone who doesn't have it, you could have a nap or go have a break or just sit down and rest for a little bit. And then your energy level comes back up. For people that are dealing with chronic pain, that's not what happens. Mm-hmm. Our energy is gone. It's gone. And so that's sort of something to bear in mind. If you're talking to people or you know people that have fibro and are dealing with chronic pain, there's a lot going on. It's such not just a matter of, it's a different kind of pain. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense.
Absolutely. And it's really helpful to learn that. And I love that spoon philosophy, and I'm going to use that. I remember, you know, a little sidetrack when I had really never understood migraines. And then when I started talking to people with migraines, it was similar of there's such a story there. This isn't a headache or I didn't drink too much. It's excruciating and it can last so long.
Yeah. So when it comes to pain, there's so much research out there on pain. And so for people that are in pain or they know people that are in pain, there's a lot of good resources out there. The Body Keeps the Score is a great resource. The Pain Relief Secret is a new book that's come out. It's very good. Dr. John Sarno does a lot of stuff on pain and pain management. Thomas Hanna does a lot of stuff with somatics. But the whole thing, Cure is another good book if you're looking for resources. But the whole thing with pain is that pain originates in the brain. And so this is a really important thing. When I bang my hand, I don't know that I have pain. What happens is it's an external stimuli that hits all the nerve endings, all the receptors. That signal goes all the way up the spinal column into the brain. And then the brain has to figure out what's happening. So it kind of goes through, think of it sort of like a memory bank. Mm-hmm. And the brain goes, oh, have we experienced something like this before? Like, have we had a similar situation or a feeling or something's happened before? And the brain kind of goes through and goes, yes, we did. Remember when we were 6 years old, or remember last week when we did this and it hurt and we didn't like it? Yeah, it's that. So then it sends a signal back down the spinal column to that location, and then we have pain. And it happens in like milliseconds, right? We don't even know it. But the thing is that the body doesn't know pain. And I when I talk about this, sometimes people think that I'm saying pain isn't real. It's not that pain isn't real. Pain is real, but your brain is telling you that it's there and your brain is telling you how to respond to it. So I'm going to use my tattoos as an example. Mm-hmm. So I have tattoos. This is a perfect example of pain and what the brain does with it. This was hours, right, of getting this done. But was it painful? Sure. Did it hurt as much as banging my hand? Not at all. Because in my brain, the emotions, the feeling, the situation attached to this and what this represents for me emotionally is not painful. Do you understand what I mean? Whereas banging my hand, I just cried. Right. When this happened before. Or you have to think about sometimes when people have pain, they tolerate pain, they live in pain because they get something that they need from it. So what I mean by that is if I seek love, or I want someone to care for me, or I want to feel like I'm important. Right. See what I mean? So then when I have pain, I can say to my partner, well, I have pain today. And then he's like, oh, okay, babe, don't worry about it. Like, I'll do the laundry. Yes, I don't want to do that. But there are some days where I'm like, yeah, I really have a lot of pain. Do I have a lot of pain? Yes. Am I 15 out of 10? Absolutely not. Like, I live at zero. So right. When I, funny, because my husband, he's an angel and I'm so blessed to have him. But when I was at the height of it, you know, 15 out of 10, it was unbearable. Things were unbearable. Right. And now I don't have pain. So like, even sometimes my husband will say, well, so what, like, what's your number? Like, where are you? Out of 10.
And I'm like, why are you asking?
I'm like, three. And he's like, sleep. Shh. That's not, like, you know, like, it's not that he doesn't care, but he's kind of like, wow.
He doesn't have to worry.
Right? Like, it's not like it was before. So, right. You know, but for me, it still feels sometimes like it's a 15 because I live at zero.
Yes.
Right? So it is, pain is very complex. And there's a lot of pieces attached to pain. And a lot of reasons why people have pain. Why? Because something is that I have that our parents, right? And right. Today I'm at 10 out of 10. Why somebody might be experiencing pain. Hi, Patrick. I just kept going.
Oh,
I just
perfect. Thank you. I love it. I'm so sorry. My internet was just like, we're going to take a break.
No, it's all, yeah. No, I was just saying that when people are experiencing pain and when you're experiencing pain, you have to think about there are reasons that that's happening. And so some of it could be, like I mentioned, you're getting something from it,
right.
But there are other reasons that you're experiencing pain. So you've got inflammation. So this is the interesting thing about fibro. Fibro is not an inflammatory condition. It is lumped in with arthritis. It is not arthritis. It doesn't affect the joints. It actually affects the connective tissues. So all the muscles and the fascia. So inflammation is not a symptom of fibromyalgia. But when you have inflammation, think about, I only have so much space here. With the bones and the muscles and the tendons and the skin. And when I have inflammation, everything expands. I only can expand so far and then I can't expand anymore. And then we get pain. That's sort of the simplest explanation of it. But so that's why we talk about inflammation, even though fibromyalgia is not an inflammatory condition. That's not what it's about. And it does get lumped in with arthritis and it's not a form of arthritis, but they just, because it's autoimmune. And I think that they just didn't really know where to put it.
Right. And from my understanding, this has changed. Was it difficult to get diagnosed historically?
Yes. So in the past, fibromyalgia diagnosis, and I'm gonna misremember the date, but it was like, I want to say 18 something, early 90s. Like, it's old. It's an old name. Like, it's been around for a while. But in the past, it was just, we didn't know what was happening. So you have fibromyalgia, and that's kind of what happened when you ruled out all the other things. You're like, you have fibro, mm-hmm. Right? And so, but getting a diagnosis, so I'm here in Ontario, Canada. And so for me, I went through the height of everything and all of my flare-ups and all the pain for almost 2 years before I got, and that was getting other tests and things done. And then I finally saw a rheumatologist.
Okay.
And I waited. So I had the 2 years of that. And then I had another 6 months of waiting to see the rheumatologist. And so to test you for fibromyalgia, there are 18 trigger points throughout the body, which are very sensitive to touch. And by definition, to have fibromyalgia, you have to have 11 of those in the body. And basically they just touch you. And it's interesting because when you have fibro and people touch one of the trigger points, so there's a lot of trigger points up in the upper back area here and near the neck. And if you have fibro and someone just literally, intensity of touch right now that I'm doing is like 1 out of 10. Like, there's no pressure at all. And for someone that has fibro, and especially if you're in a flare, mm-hmm. and you have inflammation, that could be like a 10. So the touch test, it's receiving that. And so that's sort of a bit of a difference when it comes to that trigger point test that they do. But it takes a long time to get a diagnosis. Like, I know people that have waited years and years for a diagnosis. And they rule everything out, right? They try all these different things and they do figure it out. Then they go, you have fibro. And so, you know, I live with it, but I also, I it's funny because I did a podcast, I want to say about a month ago, and the woman that was interviewing me, she said, I have fibromyalgia, but it's in remission. And I found that very interesting. And I never thought about that because I would say that I'm also in remission because I don't have flare-ups. Like, it's very rare. I don't have pain because I've learned to manage it. And my lifestyle reflects that.
Well, and I want to get into that in a minute, but the one question that keeps popping out to me is being in the mental health field, how something like that, not only having the flare-ups, but also waiting, getting tested, I mean, over 2 years, how did that impact your emotional and mental health?
So first of all, it's utterly exhausting. That's the other thing. That is one of the main symptoms of fibro, is that you are exhausted. And you're exhausted because, so you can't sleep. You can't get quality sleep. So you wake up, you're exhausted. Like, what I remember waking up and I'm already tired. Like, I haven't even started my day. And okay, I have all my spoons, but
do you
need anything? Just because I laid down for 8 hours, I didn't sleep for 8 hours, and I certainly was not rested. So the exhaustion, like that on your mental health, is just unbelievable. And again, when you say, like, I'm really tired, and people, yeah, I know you're really, yeah, and you're like, you just
yeah, know, I was Netflix binging last night too. You're
yeah, you just can't. So from that point, it really does make a difference, and it's really hard because people just don't get it. They don't understand. And so from a mental health point of view, it's absolutely, what's the word that I want? It's kind of devastating when you're trying to figure out what's going on and you don't know what's going on. You do spend a lot of time like weeping and crying, honestly, because you just don't know what's happening. You have no idea. And so for me, at the height of it, Patrick, when I was going through this, I was getting, like, I would go to bed at night, and I would lie down in bed and I would get bolts. It felt like bolts of electricity through my hands and arms and my feet and my legs. And it would jolt me awake. And when I say awake, it wasn't because I was sleeping. It was because I passed out from exhaustion. And then I would get jolted awake from this pain, and there was nothing that would help, like nothing. And so that's sort of this hopeless feeling that you have too, because you're like, what can I do? Like, how can I make this better?
And then you're trapped in your own body.
Absolutely. And the uncertainty is stressful and terrifying because you don't know what's happening, right? And that no one can give you any answers. And then when you finally, so this is the thing for me, which is why I talk about it. And I want people to hear this story. You know, you go, you see the rheumatologist and they're like, you have fibromyalgia. And you're like, okay. And they're like, take these meds. Okay. And that's it. And I'm thinking, what? So, and I knew people, I had a very good friend that had fibro. So as soon as I got my diagnosis, and she suspected that I had it long before I had my diagnosis, but when I talked to her, she's like, yeah, this is the advice that I got. And out of everything that I read, all the resources, because you go out and do research, right? As soon as you get a diagnosis, you research, you read all the things, right? All I got told, everything I read was fibromyalgia sucks. You're going to feel really tired. There's going to be flare-ups. Deal with it. Take your meds. That's how life goes. And I'm thinking, I'm 40 years old. Like, really? Is this a... And my friend said to me, it's horrible. Like, it's debilitating. You just push through, do the best that you can, and it just all the time, it sucks. And I just thought, oh my God, like, that's the worst part of it, is because there's not really anything you can do about it. Right. And the thing is, it's not, so it's funny because I read about these things and they say fibromyalgia is not progressive. Well, it's not progressive like, say, a form of arthritis or other kinds of conditions that you might have, in the sense that it gets worse, but it's not not progressive because I'm stuck in sort of this liminal state. Like I'm kind of in this in between, like Stranger Things, you're in the upside down. That's kind of what it's like. You're in the upside down and you don't really know what you're supposed to do because no one knows what to do. Like they just, there's nothing because everybody's fibro is different. That's the other thing. Like some people have flair with certain foods, other people, it doesn't bother them. So it's all, everyone's very different. So even though we try to sort of give, tips or strategies, it doesn't work the same for everybody, right? And that's sort of the frustrating thing as well. And that's what you feel frustrated and you just don't really know what to do.
Right. And then the people who we turn to don't have any answers. And then your appointment's done and you have to go survive.
I remember sitting in the office waiting to see the rheumatologist. And there was another woman in there. And so she was in, I would say she was probably in her 60s, right? And she looked at me and she goes, "Do you have a diagnosis?" And I said, "Well, my doctor thinks I have fibro and that's why I'm here." And she goes, "You make sure when you go in and see doctor, whatever, I can't remember his name now. When you go see him, you make sure that you spend more than 20 minutes with him because he will push you out really fast and just give you a prescription and off you go. And don't you dare." And this is what she said. She was like adamant. She's like, "Don't you dare let him send you out before you finish your 20 minutes. And if you want 30, you take 30. And he paid enough money for that." And I'm just like, "Oh, Nelly," like it was wild. And she's like, "No, trust me." She goes, "Because this is what happens every time. And they just put us through and they give you meds and then off you go." And I haven't, you know what, Patrick, I saw that rheumatologist once and I have never been back ever.
Did he push you out or did he try to?
I stayed there for a long time. Okay, he answered my question. It was very good. But then they pass you to your GP.
Oh,
they manage everything here. So it's a little bit different here than it is. You go to the specialist if you need to, but otherwise, because it's just for meds, right? And prescriptions.
There's nothing they can do.
There's nothing they can do. So your doctor can, your GP can do that. Okay. And so for the longest time, that's what I did, was I took my meds and kind of dealt with it. But then it just got really, really bad. And
it got worse after you got diagnosed and after you got treatment.
Yeah, because so this is the problem I find with the traditional medical field, okay, is that they're very much about treating the symptoms and they're not about treating the cause. Yes. And when it comes to pain, okay, what causes pain? Okay. It's like I mentioned earlier, the brain tells us that we have pain, but that's not what causes pain. What causes pain? Negative emotions, stress, lack of forgiveness, different foods that you eat, inflammatory foods, not sleeping enough, not moving enough. Like there are so many things that cause pain. And a lot of the things that I did to go through my journey and to heal myself was dealing with all of my negative emotions, dealing with my stress, working on forgiveness, all those things. The body holds those emotions. It holds them and it has to manifest them in some way. And so when you talk about pain, how does pain manifest itself? Digestive problems, irritability, moodiness, poor relationships, poor sleep, eczema, constipation, diarrhea, low libido. Like all of these things are caused by pain. That's how they manifest. So even though you say, "Okay, I don't have pain," then I say, "Okay, well, do you have any other, what's going on with the body?" "Oh, well, you know, like I have poor digestion." You might have pain, but it's coming out as digestive issues. Or, you know, like this here is the heart chakra, right? And this is where we hold stress and anxiety. So if we feel stress and anxiety, this tenses up here, right? And so people will, you know, you go for a massage or you're like, "Oh God, like my chest is really tight and it feel." Yeah. So you got some forgiveness work here or lack of self-love and self-worth because that's being held here. And then that manifests as pain. It's not necessarily fibro. It's not necessarily chronic pain, but there's pain here and this tightness that's here because the emotions are trapped. Yeah. So it's a little bit more convoluted than just you know, changing what you eat. And there are other pieces to it, and you got to do all the work.
Right. And I love what you're saying about this, because I think these conversations need to have more and more of being treated for the symptom. And I see that in the mental health field for years and all around of, oh, you have anxiety, you have depression, you have this. And it's funny because people get the impression that I'm anti-medication. And I've never once said that. Yeah. What I will say is that's one piece of the puzzle. It's not going to undo your trauma. It's not going to undo the abuse. It's not going to stop yes. the addiction. It's not going to stop the pain. Mm-hmm. It's a great piece to have if you have a good provider.
Yeah.
If you know someone who isn't just putting a Band-Aid on, who's actually, yeah. like you said, sitting and talking to you and really hearing the whole story.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think sometimes when I, whether it's teaching, coaching, or therapy, I'm like, I want the root. That's how I try to live. I need to figure this out, like the source here. And yeah. people sometimes it takes a while to get used to it, because like, wait a minute, what? You want me to go yeah. deep here? I'm like, oh, yeah. I got the shovel, I got the boots, I am ready.
Yes. And it's funny. Yeah, exactly. And that's what I do too. Like, I'm like, okay, so they're, you know, like whatever they say is happening. I'm like, okay. And they're like, what? I go, and then they'll say, okay. And why? And I don't mean to minimize it, but you know, like, yes. Okay. I had a horrible upbringing. Okay. And what's next? Like, okay, but you just continued the pattern. Like, what? Why? Why did you do that? Right? Because there's a reason why you did it. It's not excusing that you had this horrible upbringing, or excusing the people that maybe hurt you and were, you know, instrumental in that trauma that you have now here. But that was them, and so what are you doing now? Because the reality is that those people, whoever they are, did things based on the tools and the knowledge that they have. And now we, hopefully, that I think that's your goal and my goal, is that we give people better tools and more knowledge so that we can undo some of those things. Yes. And it's horrible things that have happened to people, absolutely. But yes. are you reliving that? Like, what is the purpose of you reliving that instead of healing it and moving forward?
Right. And I hear a lot too, you know, when people are saying, well, I just don't want to be like mom or dad, or I'm not going to be like this, or I'm not. And then that's great. Then the question I follow up is like, so what have you done differently?
Exactly.
Just like you're saying, of like, so what's changed? What hasn't? We're repeating a cycle. And it's not judgment. It's awareness of I do it. Like, I remember having the conversations, you know, with people when they're like, oh, you know, you sound like your mother or father. Well, yeah, because I was raised by them.
Right.
So I'm going to. But the challenge, or the gift, is to say, this is what I love and I'm going to continue. And this is something that doesn't work for me, or this is something that's harming me that I need to figure out.
Yes.
And I need to do that work.
Yeah. And that's the thing, right? You have to do the work. And for everybody, it doesn't matter whether you have pain or whatever your situation is, you have to want to move forward, and you have to want to do the work. Because, and I say this to my clients all the time, you have to go through it to get through it.
Yes.
And if you don't want to go through it, no problem. That's your choice. However, when we're working together, I can only bring you so far. I can guide you on the path. I'm here to support you and do as much as I can to help you, but you have to take the step, and right. you have to be the one that says, I want to do this. I had a client once say to me, I'm not doing forgiveness work. That's what she said to me. She goes, I'm not doing forgiveness. And I'm like, okay. Cause I'm still working on forgiveness, and I worked on it for many, many years. Like, we're 5 years in here and I'm still working on forgiveness. And that's fine. Cause there's always another layer, right? There's always something that comes up, and that's fine. So you continue to do the work, right? But I said to her, okay, you don't have to do forgiveness work. And so it was interesting, because I said to her, well, why don't you want to do that? And she goes, because those people deserve for me to be angry at them. And I said to her, they don't really care, nor do they know.
Right.
And she goes, I don't care. I know, and I deserve to be, I want to be angry. I said, okay, no problem. And okay. I said, but just so you know, we'll only get so far. Yep. She's like, good, no problem. We'll do what we can do. Okay. So then we're doing a 12-week session together. And so I think we're like week 7, 8, somewhere around there, right? And she comes, we get onto a call and she says to me, "I'm really angry at you." And I was like, this is the That's beginning. Like,
delicious.
Oh, this is going to be a long hour. But I'm like, okay, give it. I'm ready. I can take it. What happened? She goes, "You and your forgiveness work and you making me think about things." And I'm like, "What are you talking about?" She goes, "So I found this picture and it made me really angry." And I was like, "Why?" So she starts to tell me this story about what was said to her and things that happened. And it connects to her view of herself now. Okay. And her lack of self-worth because of that event that happened when she was much younger. And I said to her, "Okay, but I don't understand why you're mad." Because now I'm thinking about it. Now I think about, I gotta forgive these people. I go, "You don't have to do anything." She's, "Yes, I do, because now I'm really angry and I don't want to be this angry." And I'm like, "Oh, okay." So now we're getting into it. But she's just like, "But now I don't want to talk about it anymore." I'm like, "Okay." And so, and I'm sure you do the same thing with your clients, right? You just go, okay. Push them a little bit.
Depending on my mood. No, I'm just kidding. It's like, how's that working for you is one of my favorite questions.
20 minutes later, she's like, "I need to talk about this thing again." I'm like, "Okay, let's talk about this. Let's deconstruct it." Like, and so the thing is, though, she was ready at that time to then kind of, you know.
It's scary work.
It's scary work. And so, you know, people need to be ready for it, but it can be very hard and very emotional. And I think that we are taught not to show our emotions, and we're taught not to be vulnerable and all the, and we're supposed to be these people that just put on a brave face and
toughen up.
No, that's what I say.
I remember when I was reading something once, I wish I could remember what it was, but it explained also the fear that people have about emotions. Of people think the hurt and the pain, if they feel it, will last forever.
Yes.
And I remember how profound that was for me, but also I try to share that as much. And it's so validating of, oh my gosh, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
And when you know that and you put into perspective of, I use the analogy that emotions are like waves. And if we ignore them, they're just going to hit back harder and harder until they can run their course.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's a great, I love that. Yeah. And the waves will, they'll just keep hitting. It's like you have that rock wall. I don't know, the break wall, right? Mm-hmm. And the waves hit it to keep it. And eventually that wall is going to break. Like, right. Those waves are like, we got to get out. And when you start, and the thing is, when you start doing this work, even if it's little things like, how come I have pain? And then you start to sort of dive into what is happening. And then you start thinking about all the ways that pain is manifesting. Then you kind of go, oh, and then you got to start, you've kind of dipped your toe in, the waves now will keep coming. And because, and I truly believe this, that at this moment, this is when you're telling your subconscious mind that you're ready. Like, okay, let's do this. And the ego, right? The conscious mind is kind of like, well, I don't really like this because it's uncomfortable. And the subconscious mind is like, Fran wants to do this. Let's do it. Let's just make her happy. Let's do whatever she has. Like, that's what happens, right? That's the subconscious mind. It just wants to give you what you ask for. Right. And so, you know, I think that when we start doing that, then the wall comes down and we start to then unpack all these things. And in some cases, it's a lot of work. Like, there's a lot of stuff that you maybe not haven't thought about forever, for years.
Right.
So it is uncomfortable, but it feels so good when you're done. Like, forgiveness, I remember doing my forgiveness work when I was working with a coach, and I would get like tightness here in my chest. Like, I couldn't breathe. I thought I was having a panic attack. And he just looked at me and goes, "You're going to get ready to do forgiveness work." And I'm like, "I'm not doing that." "No." And he's like, "Yes, you are. It's coming. It's going to, whether you're going to cry or you're going to vomit or you're just going to, I don't know what's going to happen. You're going to yell at me. It's coming. Like, it is coming up." So it's better to just let it come out and deal with it, because it feels good afterwards. And then it just gets, and I think it gets a little bit easier each time, right?
Then you can just breathe because you're not holding that weight in your body.
Absolutely. Yep. Yeah.
So what happened after, you were saying, I just wanted to go back to that. You said it got worse. So what happened? Your pain, I mean.
So I'm going to say what I did, and I don't recommend this at all. So my doctor gave me meds. So I had something to help with sleep and pain at night. And then I had an anti-inflammatory that I took in the morning. And I was like, I'm not taking my meds anymore. I don't want to take my meds anymore. I don't recommend that to anybody. Please don't do that. I'm not advocating to stop taking your meds. Please don't do that. But I was like, I'm not going to take them anymore. So I didn't. So at the time I was teaching fitness classes and I had to drive to a town outside of where I live. So it was about a 40 minute drive and one way and then teach class and then 40 minutes back. And my husband came home from work and I'm like, I have so much pain. I can't even stand up and there's no way I can drive the car. And I had to teach class. So he's like, okay, I will drive you. So he drives me and I am crying in the car because the pain was so bad. So I get to class, my students, my women in my fitness class are like, what is happening right now? And I'm like, well, and so they kind of, I just kind of talked them through it. They were advanced. They could do their own thing. So they were lovely. And then my husband drove me back home and I cried all the way home. And so I decided that I wasn't going to take my meds. I wasn't going to do what the doctor said. I was going to eat whatever I wanted. I was going to do whatever I wanted. I was just like, I'm done. I'm not following any rules because it's not really getting any better. It's a little bit better. Okay, fine. I'm at 8 out of 10, but it's not. And what's the point? Like, that's kind of where I was. I was like, what's the point? Nothing's going to change. It's not going to get better. Nobody can help me. Screw it. That's kind of how I was. And then it got really, really bad because that's where the emotional piece comes in, because there was a lot of emotional things happening that I wasn't dealing with. And I wasn't attending to feeling those emotions and really recognizing what they were and how to accept them and release them and move on. And I wasn't doing any of that stuff. So it did get worse. And then I started doing emotional work and forgiveness work and working with a coach and changing the things that I ate and being very mindful of, you know, taking care of myself. And I started to pull away from, I was an adult educator for 16 years in the classroom. And I started really pulling away from that and then going into my training business because I enjoyed that more. There was so much stress from that. So prior to even my diagnosis, stress at work, I came into work one morning and I turned on the lights in my classroom and I couldn't see.
Wow.
Yeah. And I had been dealing with blurry vision and nausea and headaches for months and months and months, almost a year actually. And then that morning the vision was gone. And then the vision came back in one eye, completely gone in the other eye. I went to my manager's office and this is first thing in the morning. And I'm like, I can't see, I'm going home. And she's like, well, she was lovely. She was like, what's happening? Right. I'm like, I'm going home. Bye. I'm leaving. And she was just like, well, I go, whatever. And I left.
I can't see. I'm out.
So I call the optometrist. I go into the optometrist and they're like, go to the hospital immediately. We called them and they're waiting for you. And I'm thinking, oh no. Like, she's like, just go to the hospital. And I'm thinking, oh my God, they thought I had a brain tumor. They had a cancer, MS. They had no idea what was happening. So what I ended up happening was I lost the vision in the eye and it's called central serous retinopathy. And basically what that is the retina is a barrier, like the barrier behind it, right? The tissue, and it keeps all the fluid from going through and blurring your vision. And when you have this, which is a condition caused by stress, extreme stress, the fluid leaks through. Now, for most people, this is a very common condition, which I had never heard of. For most people, they don't even know they have it because we see two images, right? And our brain makes it one. That's how we see. But when this happens, for me, my brain was like, nope, we're out. We're done. We're not doing this job anymore. So it didn't give me the vision that it didn't make the one vision. It took it away from the one eye. And I ended up in bed, Patrick, for 4 months with no vision and with a migraine and a constant migraine for 4 months. And it was all stress induced. Yeah. So wow. I talk a lot about stress and managing stress because our bodies will take so much. Right. They are amazing, resilient pieces of flesh that we are really blessed to have, but our body will only take so much. And when it's had enough, it's like, I'm done. Like, and it will do something. And I wasn't listening to the signs, right? I was getting all that. I was getting migraines. I was getting headaches. I was nauseous. I didn't listen to them. I kept pushing and pushing and pushing, and it'll be fine. It's no big deal. And then finally my body was like, no, we're done. We're not doing, no, we're out, tapping out. You're going to have to deal with this. And so that's what happens. So it is, you know, possible that your body is sending you messages. And my question is, are you really listening to them? Because many of us just push through because you have stress at work and you have all these demands and responsibilities. And the reality is that I spent 4 months in bed, and you know what happened? The day that I left, they had someone, a supply teacher, teaching my class. And the next day they had someone in my classroom for the next 4 months. So you will be replaced at work.
Right.
Indispensable, and nobody cares. I don't mean that in a harsh way.
No, but it's reality.
Compassionate, caring. My supervisor was great. My coworkers were great. But the reality is that you are a body, and they have to fill that position with another body, and they will find somebody tomorrow.
Right. Right.
So you're putting all of your love, all of your attention, all of your energy, and all of this stress and worry and everything to do this amazing job for work, and they'll replace you tomorrow.
Right.
And so why? What, like, so that really, that was before my fibro diagnosis, but that sort of started the sort of change of how I was looking at life. And so now I really focus on making sure I'm happy and I'm healthy and I have time for me and things that I enjoy, and I have lots of rest time, and I don't work, like I work, but I don't work like I did before.
Right.
I don't want to again, because it's not worth it.
So how did you get to pain free?
So I saw a bioenergetic practitioner.
Okay. Can you just explain that? Cause people may not. No,
yes, a bioenergetic practitioner. So they basically look at the energy in your body and they check to see how your organs are functioning.
Okay.
And so I changed what I ate, and I did lots of, like I said, did lots of forgiveness work. I did lots of mindset work with a mindset coach, and I really focused on stress reduction. But for me, so the gut is really, that's our second brain, right? Mm-hmm. This one and this one. And if your gut is not healthy, everything else is not healthy. And so if you have pain, my first question will be is, what's going on with your gut?
Right.
Because if your gut is not healthy, that affects everything else in the body. Mm-hmm. And it will result in pain. So through minding what I eat, reducing my stress, exercising, being positive, like it sounds really stupid when I say it and simplistic, and it's not simple, but changing your life and changing the way that you look at your life and look at who's in your life. Like I remember when I went down to part-time teaching, and there is a lot of negativity all around us everywhere we go, right? And I find that in the workplace, there can be a lot of negativity.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember one day, and it's so vivid in my mind, Patrick, sitting in the staff room with my colleagues, and all they were doing was complaining.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember sitting there. I wasn't participating in the conversation. It was very surreal. It was kind of like I was out of my body. Mm-hmm. And I just sat there and I just listened. And they were like, what do you think? I'm like, I don't. They're like, I'm like,
I don't accept that.
Like I have nothing to contribute. And I just didn't I didn't participate. And it's interesting because I noticed that then they sort of started to stop talking about that stuff, or they would talk about it in a smaller group when I wasn't there.
Mm.
Or if I came in, then they changed the conversation.
Isn't that interesting?
And I never said anything about it,
right.
But I wasn't participating. So it changes the environment. Like it really does change things when you're not participating in that, whole sort of wheel of all that toxicity that's happening. When you're not participating in it. And even like when you have people in your life that are very dramatic and there's always a problem, I always say, like, the advice I give to people when they're trying to figure that out and how to manage that, I'm like, just don't engage.
Right.
They're like, what? Don't engage.
I remember one time I was working in a there was a bunch of us, and yeah. I was talking to a friend and a colleague of mine at the time, and I was trying to work through some conflict, and I opened the door, you know, of conversation of, is there anything that you want me to improve on, or anything that I can, you know, that you need to tell me? And they said, well, if you could not be so cheerful in the morning, it's really irritating. And I'm not a natural morning person at all, so I really had to work hard on that. And my thought was, holy shit, we're counselors.
Yeah.
And yeah. What is your client saying when you have that, like, and you're asking me to not be happy?
Yeah.
It really struck me, because I used to get into, I could be pulled into the negativity, and yeah. it's addictive. Because then it's like, it's a fake sense of connection and yes. friendship. But when shit goes down, you'll be thrown under the bus just like everyone else.
Yeah.
And when you pull away from that, like working, you know, working on myself, you know, my dog and I might get into an argument and she's barking too loud. But other than that, yeah. it's not any of that stuff. So it's powerful. Now, And I'm with you, and I know for myself, and I talk a lot about this on the show, is my own struggles over the years and a lifelong journey with food issues. Mm-hmm. So whenever I hear someone saying, you know, the gut, it's like in my mind, I'm like, oh, I got to work on this. I got to do better. Do you find, like, what you're telling me is logical, and I get it, but most people don't do what you're suggesting. Mm-hmm. Because they don't want to make those changes. They don't want to give up the whatever food is irritating them or sleep or all of that. It, because you're probably the first person I ever heard who said they were pain-free.
Yeah. Well, so the thing, so it's interesting to me, because when you have pain, you've probably had pain for a very long time, and it's your natural state. And so if I were to ask people, are you in pain? They would be like, yeah, yeah. Like, I have aches and pains. Like, that's what people say, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And is it really bad? Well, sometimes I'm fine. You know, it kind of comes and goes. But the reality is it doesn't come and go. The reality is that it's not here and then it's gone. Right. The reality is they're living. So this is the high and the low. They're in the middle. And that's that wave, right? It just continues in the middle. So it doesn't spike really high. It might, but not all the time. And it doesn't go really low. It kind of stays in the middle, and it just kind of ebbs and flows. And you just, that's your natural state. And so you're never not in pain. It's just sometimes worse than others, right? And so if you've not been without pain, then you don't know what it's like to be without pain. It's kind of like, so I'm gluten-free, and I've been gluten-free for like 30 years. And when I say that, people are like, you don't eat gluten? No, I don't, because it makes me really sick. How do you do that? I just don't eat it. Like, you just don't eat it. And so I always say to people, you know, if you want to give something up, you just need a food allergy. That's the easiest way. If you want to change something, I joke about it all the time with my clients. If you want to, you just need a food allergy. They're like, I can't give up sugar. You just need to be allergic to it. And then you won't eat it anymore. Because the thing is, and this is what I learned when I was going gluten-free, I was like really, really good. And then I would go to like a dinner, or I'd be out with friends, and then I would cheat a little bit and I'd have some gluten. And then I was sick for days and days. And then I'm like, okay, I'm not doing that again. And then there'd be a longer period of time. And then I'm like, okay, then I'll just have a little bit. And every time I had a little bit, the reaction was more intense every time.
Oh, wow.
And then finally I was like, I cannot do this anymore. And so that's kind of where you get to. Like, I don't have pain. And then when I have it, I'm like, oh, like I said, I'm a three. And my husband's kind of like, well, okay, but it's three. I'm like, I know, but it's really bad because I don't have it. Right. And so it's all relative, but for most people that do have pain, they are in pain all the time. They have inflammation, right? So they don't know what it's like to not be in pain. So I can tell you, when you really don't have pain, when you have it, it's like, oh my, like, but they don't know the difference, right? In the cycle, and it's constant cycle. Like, think about, like, gluten is a good example. If you haven't read the book Wheat Belly, You should read it. Everybody should read it. It takes the average person 4 days to digest and eliminate one serving of wheat.
Wow.
4 days. So think about what you eat. If you have a bagel for breakfast, 4 days till it's out of your body.
Wow.
Something that later that day that also, then there's 4 more days on top of that. So you're constantly in a cycle of trying to get rid of this food, and you're constantly in an inflamed state because gluten is an inflammatory food.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have poor gut health already, then it makes it even worse. So people just don't really know what it's like to not be in pain, and they don't know that what they need to do, maybe.
Well, and I also think sometimes people don't believe,
yes,
that they could be in pain. Yes. And I just think of my dad was of the generation where you go to the doctor, you don't ask any questions, and you don't question.
Yes.
And I remember, growing up and becoming an adult and having those conversations. And it was very difficult because there would be times where I would say, well, did you ask about this? And he would just say, no, it just wasn't, no. It just wasn't part of how he was raised.
Yeah.
So it was powerful and profound to say that of, okay, yeah. I need more.
Yeah. And I think too, though, Patrick, and I don't mean this in any disrespectful way, but there are people, for whatever reason, they enjoy being a victim.
Mm-hmm.
And they enjoy staying in that position of pain. They tolerate that. They accept it. And for whatever reason, it gives them the things that they need in their life. So if I all of a sudden come out of pain, then I have to do everything by myself. Like now I'm an independent person. Like there's no one's going to take care of me. Like
who am I without this?
And who am I? Because it's true. Like that becomes like whatever kind of diagnosis you have, it becomes your personality. It becomes who you are. Right. And we really embody that. And I think when you don't have that, then you're like, okay, well, I've been living with this situation or this condition for so long, and that's who I am. So now if I don't have the pain, then who am I? So it's a very, multi-layered situation. There's a lot of components to it, but it's possible to live pain-free. And, people don't like change. And I find this such an interesting thing. Like, I would love to do like a PhD dissertation on change, like honestly, because people don't like change, right? And if you read things and you read all the journals and all the studies, the brain doesn't even like change. The brain likes to categorize. It likes to have things in little compartments, and we label things, and like we like to routine, and we love all that stuff, right? But the thing that I find interesting, our whole entire life is change. Legit, our whole life is change. So how have we been constructed in such a manner that our brain does not like change,
right. But
everything is change. Like, right. Like we can't, as much as we try to make things the same, they're not. There is always constant change. And so people say, oh, I don't like change. I don't want things to change. Well, you have kids. Okay. If you have kids or a pet,
yes,
your whole entire life is change.
That's usually on a daily basis.
Hour to hour sometimes, right? Depends what's going on. So to me, it's kind of like it changes. It'll change who they are. It'll change their relationships. It will change who they socialize with. It'll change their mindset. Like a lot of things will change, and they don't want that. They don't want change because it's uncomfortable, because it's unknown to us, right? So that's another reason people don't go down that road, because they, I wish there was a magic pill that I could just sell to people and make them pain-free.
Mm-hmm.
I would be a bajillionaire living on the beach, yeah, drinking margaritas, right? But you have to do work, and you got to figure out what the triggers are, and everybody's different.
Right. If people want to connect to, what would that look like, and how can they reach out to you? And I feel like we could go on for hours and hours, but I definitely want to know a little bit more of like what that's like to work with you and what you're offering and what you're up to. And
yeah. So people can find me on Instagram, Fran Garten Pain Coach, is my Instagram name. I work with people one-on-one, and we do, as I mentioned earlier, I do 12-week sessions with people. And for some people, 12 weeks is enough and they learn tools and they do them work on their own. And then I have other people that continue with me. I have clients that will be with me for 12 weeks and then go off and do their own thing. And then I get a call from them. They're like, I need to come back. Let's do another 12 weeks. Cause they've unpacked some stuff on their own, right? Because we've worked through all these things. So the main things that I would say that I work on with every single client, we identify their triggers. So what is causing their pain? And then we'll talk about inflammation and how to reduce their inflammation. We talk about negativity and how to change that and reduce the negativity in their life. And we deal with stress management. And oftentimes there's some forgiveness stuff that I like to weave in there. It's, you know, it's not like
we forgiveness ninja.
But I do weave it in there, every little pieces here and there. And we do weekly calls, and we initially we'll have a call together. I like to talk to people and find out what's going on with them and if it's a good fit, because I am a kind of coach that is going to call you out on all the excuses that you make. And if you say, well, I didn't do my homework, Fran, and I'm like, why didn't you do it, Patrick? And you're like, well, and I'm like, that's not true. Why didn't you do it? Well, because it was difficult. Okay. Well, that's a different story, right? Because, I didn't have time. You didn't make time.
Right.
So you didn't have time. You didn't make time.
We sound very similar, Fran.
Well, but it's true though, right? But I think that, and again, you need to have a good connection with that person. So I really like to talk with them, meet with them, see what's going on, and to really assess whether they're ready to make the changes, because I am going to say, you got to give something up. Is it sugar? Is it gluten? Is it dairy? Like, what are you going to give up? You got it. Because there is something going on in an inflammatory state with the food. There has to be some kind of change. And so,
Is alcohol, sorry, I feel like I should know this. Is alcohol inflammatory for some people?
Alcohol is not the best because it has sugar in it, right? It's not the alcohol, it's the sugar. There's, you know, people have differing opinions about that. So I do have alcohol, not a lot. I don't drink wine or anything. It's like gin and vodka. That's it. There's not as much sugar in those. Mm-hmm. They're clear liquids, so it's better if you're going to have something. But for some people, they don't want to give stuff up, and that's fine. You don't have to do anything. But when we work together, we talk about what are the goals, right? Like, what do you want to achieve from this? Do you want to be pain-free? And I've seen people that have changed things, and in a week, the inflammation's gone down, and they're changed. So I would say to everybody that's listening, one thing that I would get you to do, if you want to think about reducing your pain and inflammation, give up sugar.
Mm.
Just give up sugar. Okay. And it might not be forever, but you have to eliminate it, and then you can add it back in and then see how your body responds. So for me, my body does not like sugar at all,
mm-hmm.
at all. And it really is a big flare for me, but for other people, it's not too bad. So
it's funny, because normally that's my last question, is what is one piece of advice that you would give to our audience? Any other advice, or are you going to stay with the sugar one?
No, I'm going to give you other advice. The one thing that it's not necessarily advice, but it's a thought that I want you to take with you, is that you have the power to change your life. You have the choices that you can make to have things better as you move forward. And it's up to you. And so myself, you, Patrick, all the other people in your life and in your healthcare team are there to support you and help you, but you have to make the choice to make the changes. If that's what you want for your life. And if you don't want to make them, it's okay too. That's your choice, right?
That's beautiful. I love that. And, oh, I'm going to have you come back on, because this is so exciting and there's so much, and we didn't even get to talk about the animals. I mean, like the real stuff.
I could do a whole episode on donkeys and cats. No problem.
Okay. Well, we'll connect, because I would love that, because they're, I just think it's so important. We need to like be out of the box, people, out of the box.
Absolutely.
Well, Fran, thank you so much for coming. I hope you can come back soon. This has been amazing. And I found it so helpful. And I know people who listen and watch it will as well. So thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
And thank you to everyone who watches and will listen to the podcast. And I hope you all have a beautiful weekend. And we will see you in 2 weeks on Friday Night Feels. Take care, everyone.